Welcome. Here's Fred Kuhn and our next guest. Enjoy.
Welcome, everybody. A great show today and a really nice guest, Kelly Palmer. Kelly is on a mission, and I like her mission, and it's to change the way the world learns. She's with Degreed, which is a wonderful concept we could spend a whole podcast on, and probably we'll do some of this. She was formerly the chief learning officer of LinkedIn, and she did learning product development at Sun Microsystems. She's been featured in the Harvard Business Review, Financial Times, Fast Company, Forbes. It goes on and on. So be sure and read her biography on the guest biography section of our website, and her contact information is there should you wish to contact her. Kelly, welcome to the show.
It's so great to be here today. Thank you.
Well, yeah, I like the subject we're going to talk about. It's going to be a lot of fun. So relevancy is really important. Your skills can die, you can let them die on the vine, and you're not relevant anymore. And then when you have to find another job, well, sorry, you're not relevant. And I see this a lot in the IT arena. So let's talk about, how do today's workers stay relevant in their career?
I think it's a great question, and probably one of the most urgent issues of our time right now is, you know, how do we upskill and reskill the workforce? So that's from a company perspective. But to your question, you know, how do people stay relevant with the skills that they need for the future? And, you know, what I tell people is learning agility is probably the most important skill that people can have. And I define that as, you know, curiosity and motivation to always be learning new things. And so if the people that have that mindset, I think, are going to help themselves stay relevant in the future. And those that don't might have their skills obsolete, you know, through the technology. It's interesting that the CEO of AT&T told his employees and recently, and this was written up in the New York Times, that people who aren't spending at least 5 to 10 hours a week learning are going to have their skills become obsolete, and they may not have a job moving forward. So that's kind of a blunt way of telling people, look, we need to be learning and building skills continuously throughout our careers to stay relevant.
You know, that's so important. I have seen this over and over in my 20 plus years doing career management, career, assessment and coaching. I have just seen so many people, especially as they age, letting their skills go dormant, or not understanding that change is coming, is always there and needs to be recognized. But the question is, how do you deal with that? How do you know what to continue and what not? Because as you and I both know from all the work that's being done today and the research, 10 years from now, there are jobs that are going to be created nobody even thought about today. How do you keep up with that as an employee?
Well, and you're exactly right. I think the statistics say if you have kids under the age of 5, 65% of them will have jobs that haven't yet been invented, which is exciting to think about, but also really hard.
Scary.
To predict skills of the future if you don't know even, you know, and I talk a lot about 10 years ago, there were, you know, jobs that didn't exist that now today are jobs that we just think of as jobs that have always been there. For example, like an app developer or YouTube content creators. Those are jobs that now are pretty familiar to us, yet 10 years didn't exist. And we couldn't have predicted that. So one of the questions I get asked most often is, what skills will we need for the future? And even though we know skills are in general hard to predict, what we can say is that we can look at trends in the workforce, and we can probably find a list of what those technical skills are that are going to be in high demand over the next couple of years, like artificial intelligence and robotics and talent analytics and driverless car engineers and drone operators, the skills that those people need. So we can predict some of those hard skills, but we can also predict some of those soft skills, which I like to call power skills. And those are the skills that are more uniquely human, that regardless of how fast things are moving and how much technology changes, these are the skills that I think are always going to be important. And those are things like emotional intelligence and communication skills, and skills that will, curiosity and problem solving, those are the skills that machines are going to have a harder time taking over through automation, and that humans can still add a lot of value. I think we were talking a little bit about EQ before the show started, and still remains really, really powerful and important.
I want to take another rabbit hole here. We talked about it from the employee side. Let's talk about it from the company side. What is the corporation's responsibility to help the workforce, because it's in their best interest to keep those skills new and fresh? What is their responsibility? How are they approaching that? What are you seeing in today's marketplace? Because I know your company works with corporations.
Absolutely. And I think what we're seeing now is that there's a huge paradigm shift happening in the world of work and learning. And it used to be that that it would be much more of a command and control model. There's a central group that's going to decide what learning people need, and they're going to push it out to their employees. And I think that there was a lot of responsibility, and employees kind of sat back and said, okay, well, I'm going to wait for my employer to tell me what I need to learn and what my career path is going to be and what I need to do. Almost kind of like how students feel in college, right? We give them a way to get a degree in college, and we give them the steps, and then they get their degree and they know they graduated, so now they can go on and get a job. I think a lot of new people coming into the workforce are also still expecting that that's the model that they've grown up with. But what we're seeing now, and what we've wanted and talked about for a long time in the learning industry, is that we really want employees to take control over their own learning and to be responsible for their own development. But in order to do that, a lot of things need to change and happen. That means that we need to move more away from this command and control model and more of empowerment. So I see the company's responsibility as, one, providing guidance. So, for example, there are companies out there that I've been working with that have been defining what skills they think are going to be most important to their company moving forward. And so say, for example, data science and data analytics, and telling their employees, look, this is going to be really important to us moving forward. And we're going to then provide programs for upskilling and reskilling in those areas, but then having a two-pronged approach and also saying, but it's also really important that you as an employee, as an individual, understand what your own career goals are and where you're strong in your skills, what skills you need to build for the future for your own career aspirations, and put together a personalized career plan, learning plan, so you can tie learning to skills to your career, either to get better at the job that you have or to prepare yourself for the job of the future. And that puts the onus a little bit more on the employee with some guidance from their employers. And I think that that's the model that people need to move to. Things are just moving too fast for one central group to be understanding what everybody in their whole company needs to know or needs to learn what to do, how to do things.
You know, you were mentioning, Kelly, that several of the issue areas, the one that I am discovering through podcasts with experts around the country, is critical thinking. Young people coming out of college today don't seem to have the same critical thinking skills or abilities to approach that as 10 or 15, 20 years ago. Are you seeing anything like that?
I think in some cases, yes. And in other cases, I would say that there are a lot of skills that students are learning in college at the university level that aren't really labeled as such. So maybe they are doing some critical thinking, but the class that they're in isn't really, you know, you couldn't look at their transcript and tell by the class that they were actually learning critical thinking. And then I'd say with some more of the more emphasis on STEM education, you know, science and technology, that those are, the emphasis on hard skills is taking away a bit from some of the more liberal arts skills or the soft skill power skills. And I think that those are becoming more important. So this idea that it may be easier to teach the more technical skills and yet harder and more important to teach some of those skills like critical thinking. And so maybe more of an emphasis on on that. But I think you're right in general that we may see more students coming into the workforce that may not have or know how to articulate their critical thinking
skills. The ability to communicate effectively. They can type three-word texts with blinding speed with their thumbs, but being able to stand up in front of a group and articulate those thoughts cohesively seems to be a declining skill.
Agreed. And I think communication will be one of those skills that's so incredibly important moving forward.
Well, let's talk about another short issue. And I mean, it's a big issue, but we're going to keep it short here. But why is traditional learning not as effective in today's marketplace?
So let's think about what we mean by traditional learning. And typically when a company would say they need to help train their employees, the typical strategy would be, okay, we're going to put together one size fits all classroom training that is typically lecture based. And really what they're doing is communicating knowledge to people. And what we know now is that the research shows that that model of learning, which we, by the way, taken a lot from the university model that we were just talking about, is really ineffective. Once we know that everybody's at a different stage of their learning or development. And so, you know, only part of that knowledge may be applicable to people in the room, but also lecture-based learning, 80% is forgotten within 30 days and less than 15% is actually applied on the job. Yet we continue to spend billions of dollars every year. And if you don't believe that companies are doing this, think again, there are still a ton of companies out there that are paying a lot of money for designing and developing lecture-based learning. Now, the model that we're moving into is more, I'm not saying in-person training isn't great. I think it is, but I think we need to rethink how we think about it. And it's more cohort-based, solving real business problems with your peers and getting feedback and reflecting on how that's going to impact your business. And I think that can be really effective. And then if you couple that with technology and all the content that's out there available to reinforce that, I think that's a winning learning strategy.
It's almost overwhelming, the amount of technology and availability of information. Truly, it's like having 50,000 libraries in one, and you got to go to the card index and figure that out. So it's the same thing with the internet, where you just, it's almost overwhelming.
Have a chapter in the book that's called Combat Content Overload, because you're exactly right. I mean, people are overwhelmed with the amount of content that's out there and available. And so that's why you'll see what technology can do is actually help you curate that content into manageable chunks that are digestible and also really broaden your definition of what learning is. We did some research a couple of years ago asking how the workforce really learns. And what we found was people are they're Googling things, they're listening to articles, listening to podcasts like this one, they're reading books, they're going to events. But if you think about that traditional learning model, we don't count any of that as learning. We only count classroom training and some of the e-learning as traditional learning. So if you can imagine now, you can curate content from a variety of sources and help people feel less overwhelmed with all the great content, but yet still take advantage of all the great content that's out there. That's where how technology, learning technology, is helping people sort through that.
We have just a little bit of time left, and I do want to ask you about this. And what do companies need to do to upskill their employees today?
So I think I'm working with companies that are using a variety of ways to upskill, but in general, it's, again, giving them guidance about perhaps what skills need to be that the company needs, and then empowering employees to say, look, we want you to assess yourself and say, you know, let's take a real concrete example. I think it will help people listening. So say I'm an instructional designer and I want to become a learning leader, a manager of a learning organization. What skills do I need in order to move from instructional designer to a learning leader, or to from a instructional designer to a learning experience designer, which is a lateral move, not an up move, but you still need new skills. How can you figure out what skills you need to be in that new role and where you assess yourself of where you are in that role now so that you can see where your skill gap is? That's how companies are thinking about it. They're saying, let's get a baseline to understand what skills people in our organization have, or me personally, what skills I have, and then what skills I need either to get better at the job I have or to get ready for that next job that I have. And I think that giving a lot of companies are moving to badges or credentials to say, look, if I really knew what skills my employees had and what level they were at, there's so much I could do with that information. So that's what the expertise economy is really all about, is saying, let's have skills be the currency, understand people's skills the way we understand what it means when you tell me you've got an MBA or whether you've got, you know, a bachelor's degree in marketing. You have some sense of what that means, but what if you could do that at the skill level? Imagine what you could do. So I think that that's how a lot of companies are approaching it, both by saying we're going to give guidance at the high level, but then really empower employees to have personalized learning goals and to build the skills that they need for the future.
Folks, we have had such a wonderful time here with Kelly Palmer, who is a co-author of the book, The Expertise Economy, How the Smartest Companies Use Learning to Engage, Compete, and Succeed. Kelly, thank you so much for joining us today. Folks, don't forget to go to the website and look up Kelly's biography in that section of our Workplace Strategies website. Kelly, thanks so much for joining us today.
It's been such a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. If you wish to speak with Fred, or you want a transcript of this interview, send an email to podcast@stuartcoopercoon.com. See you soon.